Kedra Klebau, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, you're former president of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, Local 4 in Vancouver. And because of your work and commitment to progressive politics, we invited you to be part of the film set here in our region, Necessity, Rails, Rivers, and the Thin Green Line. And it's wonderful to not only have you as part of the film, but also to have you joining us for the theatrical premiere in Vancouver this Sunday. That'll be at 2 o'clock, and you'll be there with some of the other featured participants in the film to respond to audience questions in the Q&A. So let's start with what led you to accept our invitation to be part of this film that tells a bigger story beyond Vancouver, but include your work there at the port on the fight against expansion of oil by rail in our region.
Well, the reason that I say we decided to be part of it, because it was Longshore Local 4 that actually gave me permission to be part of it and represent us during the film. The reason we decided to be part of it is we were proud of the work that we did in battling the Tesoro oil export facility. You know, we rely on the river for our livelihood, as many people do. A while back during another interview, I said that I think 2 out of every 5 jobs in Washington is related to trade. And I underestimated that. I gave the wrong numbers. I believe it's actually closer to 4 out of every 5 jobs in Washington is related to trade.
Can you say a little bit about what that encompasses when you say related to trade?
So you're a farmer or an agricultural worker. You know, the wheat's getting exported, or your hay is getting exported, or your fruit's getting exported. You know, your job's related to trade. If you're trucking steel comes in on ship. Leaves by truck, you know, the truck drivers, you know, the dispatchers in those jobs, you know, the mechanics in those jobs, their jobs are related to trade. I mean, once you start breaking it down, you know, and it's not just shipping, of course, you know, Boeing workers, you know, their jobs are related to trade as well. You know, that's how heavily we rely on trade in the state of Washington. But in Vancouver, you know, our jobs wholeheartedly depend on trade, and that river is the lifeblood of our job. And when Tesoro came in, said that they were going to build the largest oil export terminal in the United States, we took a second to look at what that could mean to us. We knew that we would get jobs there. We knew that it would benefit us, but it wouldn't be a lot of jobs. What we looked at is how they were shipping their oil to other facilities. And when we started looking into it, that's when all the accidents were happening. I mean, it seemed like they couldn't go a week without one of their trains derailing and exploding into a fireball, right? And then Loch Meganic happened and, you know, destroyed that town. I can't remember how many people it killed, but Quebec. And so anyway, at that point, our union meeting talked about it, whether or not we wanted to support that project. And we voted on it. Is a unanimous yes to oppose the project and to not support that terminal being built. And the reason is, you know, if towns get blown up in Quebec, does it affect us? No, it's horrible, but does it affect us? No. If a leak happens in the middle of a wheat field in the middle of North Dakota, does that affect us? No. Does it suck? Yeah. If a train derails and blows up in Montana, does that affect us? No. Does it suck? Yeah. But if a train blows up in downtown Vancouver, if a train derails and spills into the river, if a ship were to lose steering and end up on the jetty at the mouth of the river, would that affect us? Yes. It would shut us down for a long time. There wouldn't be any ship traffic coming up or down the river. So at that point, we decided best thing we can do is oppose this. As a longshore worker, we don't get to decide what cargoes we handle, what cargoes we don't. Contractually, we're bound to handle whatever cargo we're hired to handle. But this was an instance where we could actually be proactive, and we knew that we didn't want to handle crude oil. And we knew that the only way we could keep from having to handle crude oil was to get involved and keep the terminal from being built. And we went to our port commission right after Tesoro had announced that they were going to try to build the terminal there. And we went on record as opposing the Tesoro facility. And I'll never forget, Columbia River Keepers were there, and they were there to do the same thing. And luckily, we got to speak ahead of them. We were actually able to go on record and oppose the terminal before the Sierra Club came out and opposed it.
Now, you're partly emphasizing perhaps here how labor and environmental groups historically have been pitted against each other in this obscene forced choice, either, you know, pick what you want, jobs in the short term or a livable planet or environment. How do you respond to that horrible forced choice that these companies kind of pit environmentalists against workers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They make it sound like you have to be either one way or the other, right? You know, you can't be a patriot. You can't be a union worker and oppose fossil fuel companies, right? I mean, if you oppose fossil fuel, then, you know, you're a tree hugger.
Even that language kind of feminizes the environmental movement and appealing to a kind of macho masculinity among workers by casting it in those gendered terms.
I guess I've never really thought of it that way, but yeah, that's exactly, you know, what they try to make you feel ashamed for caring about the environment, right? And, you know, I'm not gonna, I kind of like it when people give me a hard time saying, oh, are you a tree hugger? I'm like, damn right, right? I love the forest, right? There's nothing I like better than driving through the redwoods. You know, I just bought 20 acres up in Goldendale, 16 of them wooded. For people to, you know, try to make it sound like environmentalists are horrible, it's like, hey, you know, most of these people that give you a hard time are also sportsmen, right? Hey, you like fish to catch? Maybe you should care about the environment. You like hunting deer? Maybe you should care about the environment. You like going camping in the woods? Well, maybe you should care about the environment before global warming gets so bad that, you know, there's only so many years we can have the worst fires on record before we don't have any forests left. You know, it's like, really kind of think about what you're saying and who are you protecting? Okay, I get it. You know, you see these guys driving their trucks around, driving their fast cars. I get it. Yeah. I don't know if they're afraid there's never going to be gasoline and they won't be able to drive their 68 Camaros or, you know, whatever they're driving. But, you know, that's not the issue here. The issue is, why are we exporting coal and oil to other countries so that, you know, companies can use them for energy or production where they don't have environmental standards?
Yeah, it's so like, a lot of this is oil coming through the region for export.
Right, right. People have a misunderstanding, first of all, what a longshoreman does. When we say we're longshoremen, they're like longshore workers. When we say we're longshore workers, they're like, oh, gosh, how do you stay out on ships for that long? Like, oh, I've never been out on the ocean in a ship. I've been out in a fishing boat a couple times, but, you know, we don't go out on the boats. We load and unload the ships. You know, that's what a longshore worker does, is we unload and load ocean-going vessels.
And the ILWU has a long history of militant organizing and fighting for the rights of workers. Can you say a little bit about that as it takes you into this period we're in around the climate crisis and how the traditions of ILWU may be important as we continue this fight, not only in the sacrifice zones of Native communities, but we're all in a sense now in sacrifice zones, you said about the lifeblood of the river,
right?
And rivers elsewhere in the air. How do you see the traditions of ILWU as perhaps helping us confront the crisis?
Well, you know, when you're talking about the traditions of the ILWU, you know, Forbes calls us the most dangerous union in the world, and we wear that with a badge of honor, right? It's like, damn right we are. And, you know, the reason we are is because the rank and file makes the decisions, right? We don't hire our representatives off the street. All of our representatives are you know, our business agents, our labor relations, our presidents, our executive board members, you know, all these reps have to come from the longshore industry, you know, whether that's local or whether that's the longshore division or the international, it doesn't matter. You have to come from the union to lead the union. And
there's a tradition of democracy in the union.
Right. And that leader has to do what the rank and file says. And Harry Bridges always said, if the rank and file makes the decision, then the decision is always the right one. So when you're talking about what we've done in the past, you know, I mean, I can look back as far as the 40s when our union took a stand and refused, you know, right before World War II or during World War II, we refused to load scrap ships that were bound for Japan. Why would we do that? Why would we load scrap ships to send to Japan to be built into planes and ships to fight us? And our guys took that stand. There's been other stands like that. You know, it's always about doing what's right as far as we're concerned, you know, whether that's for the community, you know, the nation or the worker, it doesn't matter. We're going to do what we agree is right. It's not one person making the decision. It's the entire membership making the decision.
So in the film, you tell some of the story of initially the kind of mixed reactions among workers to the Kai activists who were on the river and the port to stop the ships carrying tar sands pipes up to that lethal project of the tar sands oil fields in Canada. But you were saying that it was a different issue resisting the building of that Tesoro Savage terminal there. And you talk some in the film about the different reactions to the Kai activists and also to the terminal coming in, which as always promised jobs and reducing taxes. You kind of expose that sham appeal. But in closing, have there been any struggles within the local four about how to respond to the fight against fossil fuels in this region? Or is that an ongoing kind of conversation?
When the Kai activists, you know, did their blockade to keep the ship carrying the Trans Mountain pipe from docking, you know, some of our guys were like, yeah, great. That's awesome. And other guys were just like, you know, hey, get out of the way, you know, that's our job. We need to do it, right? The membership is never going to, you know, agree 100%.
Why was how did you get to such agreement on opposition to the terminal? Was there a lot that you had to organize around that, or was that a no-brainer?
It was a no-brainer as far as we were concerned. They were going to take property that we work, and they were going to replace it with a rail loading and unloading yard. They were going to replace that property with oil tanks, right? They were going to take possible berth space for ships for theirs. We have a windmill ship come in, you know, and we're unloading windmill blades. You know, it takes about 35 to 50 guys per shift to unload a windmill ship, right? And they take a lot of space out in the yard. You know,
they're big.
They're 200 and some feet long. You know, you got to have big machines to load them onto. You got to have big machines to unload them and set them down out in the yard. You know, and later on when they decide to come and pick those up, it takes big machines to load them onto a truck. It takes a lot of guys. Talking about jobs per acre, a windmill job is a lot of jobs per acre. When you're talking about jobs per acre with an oil export facility, you're not. It takes what? Three guys to unload a train? Takes maybe one guy to load a ship? I mean, you hook up a hose and press start, right? I mean, I don't know. I've never worked with one, but I know that it's not a lot of jobs. And they take a lot of acreage, and there's just, you know, there's no benefit to us, really. It only served to hurt us by supporting that job. You know, you have the danger of the river getting shut down if there was some kind of spill. If they look to expand sooner or later, we're running out of places where we can work. We have to have laydown space to put the cargo when we unload it from the ship. We have to have space to load the trucks. We have to have space to load the trains. Big export companies that come in and they handle, you know, liquid bulk. And we already see it right in the middle of our port. The companies that handle liquid bulk, they take a lot of space and they're hard to work around. And there's just no jobs created there. Now you've got Tesoro pretty much right in the middle of our port. You know, they've got a lot of tanks there. And yeah, they employ a number of people, but it doesn't seem like they ever employ more or less.
You're saying Tesoro is there, but they did not get the expansion they sought?
Tesoro and New Star have a loading and unloading facility right in the middle of the port. They also have tanks out on Fruit Valley, out near the rail yard. There's a pipeline that runs from the port out to Fruit Valley. And they, you know, it runs underneath the neighborhoods there in Fruit Valley, probably pretty close to the school and everything.
Cager Claybaugh, it's so good to have you on the Old Mole Variety Hour this morning. And I thank you again, and for the ILWU Local 4 for supporting this documentary film that the community will be able to see at the Kiggins Theater. They can go on the Kiggins Theater website to get tickets, and that you'll be joining us for a Q&A after the screening, which we really look forward to. It'll be a time of both celebrating the successes of this movement to save the planet, but also to continue to do the work we need to and find ways where communities can come together around this fight against the expansion of fossil fuels. Thanks so much, Cager, for taking your time to be with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for including us. And it's very important, the work that's being done. And, you know, we want to support it. And we also, you know, because we did beat the Tesoro export facility, you know, we also want to thank everybody that helped us. We couldn't have done it alone. We were just a small spoke in that wheel. And we were just glad we could do our part. And we really appreciate everyone else that came together to help us, to help the community, help the environment, really.
Thank you.